from back in 1984, Band-Aid. It's Time Travel with Chris Earle. Special Christmas Eve show. Thanks for listening to your Freeform station. It is WMFO Medford. I have three or four here from Sting.
WMFO Medford.
I saw three ships come sailing in on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. I saw three ships come sailing in on Christmas Day in the morning. And what was in those ships, all three, on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day? And what was in those ships, all three, on Christmas Day in the morning? Our Savior Christ and His Lady on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. Our Savior Christ and His Lady on Christmas Day in the morning. Pray will I sail those ships, all three, on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. Pray will I sail those ships, all three, on Christmas Day in the morning. Or they sail into Bethlehem on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. Or they sail into Bethlehem on Christmas Day in the morning. And all the bells on earth shall ring on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. And all the bells on earth shall ring on Christmas Day in the morning. And all the angels in heaven shall sing on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. And all the angels in heaven shall sing on Christmas Day in the morning. And all the souls on earth shall sing on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. And all the souls on earth shall sing on Christmas Day in the morning. And let us all rejoice and be on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. And let us all rejoice and be on Christmas Day in the morning.
Soul kick, please good misses a soul kick, an apple, a pear, a plum, or a
Did IQs just drop sharply while I was away?
Brothers and sisters, I don't know what this world is coming to.
Yes, the rhythm, the rebel.
Time Travel with Chris Earl here with you till 7 p.m.
Hi, everybody. This weekend, as you gather with family and friends, Michelle and I wanted to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy Holidays.
Did IQs just drop sharply while I was away?
My mommy always said there were no monsters, but there are.
We Americans are always at our best when we hear and heed the cries of others.
When confronted with massive human suffering, Americans have always stepped up and answered the call to help.
Did IQs just drop sharply while I was away?
855-915-WMFO if you want to make a request.
I love you back.
I'm living in that 21st century, doing something mean to it. Do it better than anybody you've ever seen. Do it screams on the haters. Body like scream to it. I guess every superhero needs the music. No one man should have all that power. The clock ticking. I charge happy hours. Stop tripping. I'm ripping off the power.
Time Travel with Chris Earl here with you till 7 p.m.
Get away from her, you bitch!
The angel Gabriel from heaven came. His wings as drifted snow, his eyes as flame. Oh, hail, said he, the holy maid of Mary. Most high.
The ties between the north head and the south. All day we hauled the frozen sheets to escape the storm's wet mouth. All day as cold as charity, in bitter pain and dread. For very life and nature, we tacked from head to head. Tigris roared, but every tack we made we brought the north head close aboard. We saw the cliffs and houses then, the breakers running high, and the the coast guard in this garden, this glass against this eye. The frost was on the village roofs, as white as ocean foam. The good red fires were burning bright in every longshore home. The windows sparkled clear, and the chimneys volleyed out. And a vow we sniffed the victuals as the vessel went about. The bells upon the church were rung with a mighty jovial cheer. For it's just that I should tell you how of all days in the year, this day of our adversity was blessed Christmas morn. And the house above the coast guards was the house where I was born. And when I knew the talk they had, the talk that was of me, of the shadow on the household and the sun that went to sea. And though the wicked fool I seemed in every kind of way, to be here and hauling frozen ropes on blessed Christmas Day.
You're listening to WMFO Medford, Mass. It's a very special time travel here with you Christmas Eve till 8 p.m. My name is Chris Earle, taking requests 855-915-WMFO. Get yourself an eggnog or your favorite beverage, because Patrick Stewart, Jean-Luc Picard himself, will be delivering a Christmas carol at 5:30 here on Time Travel with Chris Earle. Part one of a Christmas carol coming up at 5:30. Grab your eggnog. Grab your water, grab yourself some cookies, make some fudge. It is a Christmas carol coming up at 5:30. Part one, Patrick Stewart, here on Time Travel. In the meantime, how about the Rat Pack?
It's a marshmallow world in the winter, when the snow comes to cover the ground. It's time for play, it's a whipped cream day. I wait for it the whole year round. Those are marshmallow clouds being friendly in the arms of the evergreen trees. And the sun is red like a pumpkin head. It's shining so your nose won't freeze. Oh, the world is your snowball. See how it grows. That's how it goes whenever it snows. The world is your snowball just for a song. Get out and roll it along. Oh, yeah. shots. Take a walk with your favorite girl. It's a sugar date. What if spring is late? In winter, it's a marshmallow world.
It's a marshmallow world in the winter, when the snow comes to cover the ground.
It's time for play. It's a whipped cream day. I wait for it the whole year round. And the sun is red, like a pumpkin head. It's shining so your nose won't freeze. Ah, the world is your snowball. See how it grows. That's how it goes. Whenever it snows, the world is your snowball. Just for a song, get out and roll it along. It's a yum, yummy world. Take a walk with your favorite girl. It's a sugar date. What if spring is late? In winter, it's a marshmallow world.
Time tonight, Carmen?
Oh, I had a wonderful time, Sam.
Well, good. Well, I figured it'd be so much nicer here than outdoors, you know, where the fireplace is going. It's nice, it's cozy, it's warm and nice.
Yeah, I really can't
stay. But baby, it's cold outside.
I've got to go
away. But baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has
been hoping that you drop in.
So very nice.
I'll hold your hands there just like
my
ice.
My mother will start to
beautiful,
worry.
What's your
and
hurry?
And father will be pacing the floor.
Listen to that fireplace
so
roar.
So really I'd better scurry.
Beautiful, please don't hurry.
Well, maybe just a half a drink more.
Put some records on while I pour.
The neighbors might
but
think.
Maybe it's bad out there.
Say, what's
no
in this drink?
No cabs to be had out there.
I wish I knew
your
how.
Your eyes are like starlight
to
now.
To break the spell.
I'll take your hat, your hair looks
I
well.
Ought to say no, no, no.
Mind if I move in closer?
At least I'm gonna say that I tried.
What's the sense of hurting my pride?
I really can't
oh,
stay.
Oh, baby, don't hold out.
Ah, but it's cold outside.
Now that's nicer, isn't it? We got the magazines all put away. We're all comfy and warm and, well, Carmen, now?
I simply must
but
go.
But baby, it's cold outside.
The answer is no, Sam.
But baby, it's cold outside.
The welcome has
how
been.
How lucky that you dropped
so
in.
So nice and warm.
Look. Out that window at that storm.
My sister will be suspicious.
Gosh, your lips look delicious.
My brother will be there at
like
the door.
Waves upon a tropical shore.
My maiden aunt's mind is
gosh,
vicious.
Your lips are delicious.
Well, maybe just a cigarette more.
Never such a blizzard before.
I've got to get
but
home.
Maybe you'll freeze out there.
Sam, lend me your coat.
But up to your knees out there.
You've really been grand.
I thrill when you touch my hand.
But don't you see?
How can you do this thing to me?
There's bound to be talk tomorrow.
Think of my lifelong
at
sorrow.
At least there will be plenty in
mind. You caught pneumonia and
I
die.
I really can't
get
stay.
Over that old doubt.
Oh,
baby,
but it's cold.
Thank you.
herself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year, all our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. Next year, all our troubles will be miles away. Once again, as in olden days, happy golden days of yore. Faithful friends who are dear to us will be near to us once more. Someday soon we all will be together, if the fates allow. Until then, we'll have to muddle through somehow. So have yourself a merry little Christmas now.
There you go. That's putting you right in the mood there, Frank. Have yourself a merry little Christmas here on Time Travel with Chris Earle. It is Christmas Eve. You're spending Christmas Eve with Chris Earle here on WMFO 91.5 FM, Medford, Massachusetts. Oh, it's just flying by here. I've been here since 1 p.m. I'm going to stick around till 8 p.m. for you. And I've got some special things for you. Everything's been special so far. But I have a Christmas carol read to you by the one and only Jean-Luc Picard, Patrick Stewart. I'm going to do part one at 5:30, so get yourself an eggnog or a tea or a coffee, some hot wassail, whatever that may be, some chestnuts, and bring yourself over to the lounge chair, fire up a fire or put it on the television, whatever you do in 2017. It gets a little crazy. Maybe you're wrapping presents. Maybe you're still decorating the tree. Maybe you don't have a tree up. You can do it now. And you can listen to a Christmas carol, a Christmas carol in its entirety here on Time Travel tonight. Part one is coming up at 5:30, and then we'll take a little break, and then part two I will play a little bit later. It's about 35, 40 minutes of each part there. So you can go and take a pee-pee while I play the Pet Shop Boys and some other stuff for you. But in the meantime, a couple more minutes here, I'm going to play you a few other requests and a few other songs for you. I'm playing some Rat Pack stuff here, so Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, and Sammy Davis Jr. at 5:30. Again, a Christmas carol. Be ready. Here's Jingle Bells, Sammy Davis Jr.
Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh, o'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight. Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Everybody! Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jing, jing, jingle in the evening, and may I say, gee, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle in the evening, jing, jing, jingle in the morning, jingle, 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 jingle.
You better watch out, you better not cry, better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list and checking it twice, gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping, he knows when you're awake, he knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. Oh, you better watch out, better not cry, better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. Watch out, you better not cry, better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list and he's checking it twice. He's gonna find out who is naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping, he knows when you're awake, he knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. Oh, you better watch out, better not cry, better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
WMFO Medford.
If you want to stay alive this holiday season, when you drink, when not to drive, we'll tell you the reason. You could lose your license and end up doing time, pay thousands of dollars too in lawyers' fees and fines.
This holiday season, if you plan to drink, plan how to get home safely. Designate a driver or call a cab.
Make a plan before you go, when your head is clear. Don't wait till you've had eggnog, hot wassail, or beer.
Brought to you by the Texas Department of Transportation.
It's WMFO Medford. My name's Chris Earle. The show is Time Travel. It is a very special time travel here today. It is Christmas Eve with Chris Earle, here with you until 8 p.m., and we're getting ready for part one of A Christmas Carol. I have it broken into two parts tonight. It is read by Jean-Luc Picard himself, Patrick Stewart. And it's from the early 90s. I believe he put this out in 1992 on CD. The CD is actually going for $100, I guess. I have the first version of it, and I usually listen to it every year. And I thought, why not share it with my WMFO community, especially since I'm on here for a number of hours today. I got the time to share it with you. So I will give you a few more minutes to get your eggnog, your hot wassail, your coffee, your tea, your cookies, your fudge, whatever you are doing. Stoke the fire, throw another log on there, get the Christmas lights set up, because A Christmas Carol is coming up in just a few minutes after this last one from Mariah Carey here on Time Travel.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just
Here we go, everybody. A Christmas Carol, Part 1, read to you by Patrick Stewart, here on Time Travel, Christmas Eve.
Boom, 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 boom.
What the hell is going on?
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me.
Let's Eartha Kitt. That's not Jean-Luc Picard. Here we go, everybody. Let's try that again. A Christmas Carol, read to you by Patrick Stewart.
Molly was dead, to begin with. There is no doubt whatever about that. The register of his burial was signed by the clerk, the clergyman, the undertaker, the chief mourner. Scrooge signed it. Old Molly was dead as a doornail. Scrooge knew he was dead. Of course he did. How could it be otherwise? Scrooge and he were partners for I don't know how many years, though Scrooge never painted out old Marley's name. There it stood years afterwards above the warehouse door, Scrooge and Marley. Sometimes people new to the business called Scrooge Scrooge, and sometimes Marley, but he answered to both names. It was all the same to him. Oh, but he was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone, Scrooge. A squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. Hard and sharp as flint, from which no steel had ever struck generous fire, secret and self-contained and solitary as an oyster. The cold within him froze his old features, nipped his pointed nose, shriveled his cheek, stiffened his gait, made his eyes red, his thin lips blue, and spoke out shrewdly in his grating voice. He carried his own low temperature always about with him. He iced his office in the dog days, and he didn't thaw it 1 degree at Christmas. External heat and cold had little influence on Scrooge. No warmth could warm, nor wintry weather chill him. Nobody ever stopped him in the street to say, "My dear Scrooge, how are you? When will you come to see me?" No beggars implored him to bestow a trifle. No children asked him what it was o'clock. Even the blind men's dogs appeared to know him, and when they saw him coming, would tug their owners into doorways and up courts. But what did Scrooge care? It was the very thing he liked. To edge his way along the crowded paths of life, warning all human sympathy to keep its distance. Once upon a time, and of all the good days in the year, on Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busy in his counting house. It was cold, bleak, biting weather, foggy withal, and he could hear the people in the court outside go wheezing up and down, beating their hands upon their breasts and stamping their feet upon the pavement stones to warm them. The city clocks had only just gone 3, but it was quite dark already. The fog came pouring in at every chink and keyhole, and was so dense without, the houses opposite were mere phantoms. The door of Scrooge's counting house was open, that he might keep his eye upon his clerk, who, in a dismal little cell beyond, a sort of tank, was copying letters. Scrooge had a very small fire, but the clerk's fire was so very much smaller that it looked like one coal, but he couldn't replenish it, for Scrooge kept the coal box in his own room, and so surely as the clerk came in with the shovel, the master predicted that it would be necessary for them to part. Whereupon the clerk put on his white comforter and tried to warm himself at the candle, in which effort, not being a man of strong imagination, he failed.
A Merry Christmas, Uncle!
It was the voice of Scrooge's nephew, who came upon him so quickly that this was the first intimation he had of his approach. He had so heated himself with rapid walking in the fog and the frost, this nephew of Scrooge's, that he was all in a glow. His face was ruddy and handsome, and his eyes sparkled. "Merry Christmas, Uncle! God save you!" "Ah," said Scrooge. "Humbug." "Christmas a humbug, Uncle? You don't mean that, I'm sure." "I do." "Merry Christmas!" "Oh, don't be cross, Uncle. What else can I be when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas! Out upon Merry Christmas! What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older and not an hour richer? If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart. Uncle, nephew, keep Christmas in your own way and let me keep it in mine." "Keep it? But you don't keep it. Come, dine with us tomorrow." "I'll see you in hell first." "But why? Why?" "Good afternoon. I want nothing from you. I ask nothing of you. Why cannot we be friends? Good afternoon." "Well, I'm sorry with all my heart to find you so resolute, but I'll keep my Christmas humor to the last. So, Merry Christmas, Uncle. Good afternoon. And a Happy New Year. Good afternoon." His nephew left the room, but stopped at the outer door to bestow the greetings of the season on the clerk, who, cold as he was warmer than Scrooge, for he returned them cordially. "There's another fellow, my clerk, with 15 shillings a week and a wife and family, talking about a Merry Christmas. I'll retire to Bedlam." The clerk, in letting Scrooge's nephew out, had let two other people in. They were portly gentlemen, pleasant to behold, and now stood with their hats off in Scrooge's office. They had books and papers in their hands, and they bowed to him.
"Scrooge and Marley's, I believe. Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?"
"Mr. Marley has been dead these 7 years," said Scrooge. "He died 7 years ago this very night."
"We have no doubt his liberality is well represented by his surviving partner. At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessaries, and hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts, sir."
"Are there no prisons?"
"Oh, plenty of prisons."
"And the union workhouses, are they still in operation?"
"Oh, they are still. I wish I could say they were not."
"The treadmill and the poor law are in full vigor, then?"
"Both very busy, sir."
"Oh, I was afraid from what you said at first that something had occurred to stop them in their usual course. I'm very glad to hear it."
"Under the impression that they scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind or body to the multitude, a few of us, Mr. Scrooge, are endeavouring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. We choose this time because it is a time of all others when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices. What shall we put you down for?"
"Nothing."
"You wish to be anonymous?"
"I wish to be left alone. Since you ask me what I wish, gentlemen, that is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments I have mentioned. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there."
"But many can't go there, Mr. Scrooge, and many would rather die."
"If they would rather die, they had better do it and decrease the surplus population. Good afternoon, gentlemen." Seeing clearly that it would be useless to pursue their point, the gentlemen withdrew. Scrooge resumed his labors with an improved opinion of himself. And the fog and the darkness thickened, thick and so that people ran about with flaring links, proffering their services to go before horses in carriages and conduct them on their way. The ancient tower of a church, whose gruff old bell was always peeping slyly down at Scrooge out of a Gothic window in the wall, became invisible and struck the hours and quarters in the clouds with tremulous vibrations afterwards, as if its teeth were chattering in its frozen head up there. The cold became intense. In the main street at the corner of the court, some laborers were repairing the gas pipes and had lighted a great fire in a brazier, round which a party of ragged men and boys were gathered, warming their hands and winking their eyes before the blaze in rapture. Foggier yet, and colder. Piercing, searching, biting cold. The owner of a scant young nose, gnawed by the hungry cold as bones are gnawed by dogs, stooped down at Scrooge's keyhole to regale him with a Christmas carol. God bless you, merry gentlemen, may not think you dismay. Remember, Scrooge seized the ruler with such energy of action that the singer fled in terror, leaving the keyhole to the fog and even more congenial frost. At length, the hour of shutting up the counting house arrived. With an ill will, Scrooge dismounted from his stool and tacitly admitted the fact to the expectant clerk in the tank, who instantly snuffed his candle out and put on his hat. You will want all day tomorrow, I suppose?
If quite convenient, sir.
It's not convenient, and it's not fair. If I was to stop half a crown for it, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll be bound. And yet you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work.
Well, it's only once a year.
A poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. But I suppose you must have the whole day. Be here all the earlier next morning. The clerk promised that he would, and, buttoning his greatcoat to the chin, Scrooge walked out. The office was closed in a twinkling, and the clerk, with the long ends of his white comforter dangling below his waist, for he boasted no greatcoat, went down a slide on Cornhill at the end of a lane of boys 20 times in honour of its being Christmas Eve, and then ran home to Camden Town as hard as he could pelt to play at Blind Man's Bluff. Scrooge took his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern, and having read all the newspapers and beguiled the rest of the evening with his banker's book, went home to bed. He lived in chambers which had once belonged to his deceased partner. They were a gloomy suite of rooms in a lowering pile of a building up a yard, where it had so little business to be that one could scarcely help fancying it must have run there when it was a young house, playing at hide-and-seek with other houses, and have forgotten the way out again. It was old enough now, and dreary enough, for nobody lived in it but Scrooge, the other rooms being all let out as offices. Now, it is a fact that there was nothing at all particular about the knocker on the door, except that it was very large. It is also a fact that Scrooge had seen it night and morning during his whole residence in that place. Also that Scrooge had as little of what is called fancy about him as any man in the city of London. Let it also be borne in mind that Scrooge had not bestowed one thought on Marley since his last mention of his 7 years dead partner that afternoon. And then, let any man explain to me, if he can, how it happened that Scrooge, having his key in the lock of the door, saw in the knocker, without its undergoing any intermediate process of change, not a knocker, but
Marley's face!
Marley's face. It was not in impenetrable shadow as the other objects in the yard were, but had a dismal light about it, like a bad lobster in a dark cellar. It was not angry or ferocious, but looked at Scrooge as Marley used to look, with ghostly spectacles turned up upon its ghostly forehead. The hair was curiously stirred, as if by breath or hot air, and though the eyes were wide open, they were perfectly motionless. As Scrooge looked fixedly at this phenomenon, it was a knocker again. To say that he was not startled would be untrue, but he put his hand upon the key he had relinquished, turned it sturdily, walked in, and lighted his candle. He did pause with a moment's irresolution before he shut the door, and he did look cautiously behind it first, as if he half expected the sight of Marley's pigtail sticking out into the hall. But there was nothing on the back of the door except the screws and nuts that held the knocker on, so he said, "Bah!" and closed it with a bang. The sound resounded through the house like thunder. Every room above and every cask in the wine merchant's cellars below appeared to have a separate peal of echoes of its own. Scrooge was not a man to be frightened by echoes. He fastened the door and walked across the hall and up the stairs, slowly too, trimming his candle as he went, for it was pretty dark. But up Scrooge went, not caring a button for that. Darkness is cheap, and Scrooge liked it. But before he shut his heavy door, he walked through his rooms to see that all was right. He had just enough recollection of the face to desire to do that. Sitting room, bedroom, lumber room, nobody. Nobody in the closet. Nobody in his dressing gown, which was hanging up in a suspicious attitude against the wall. Quite satisfied, he closed his door and locked himself in. Double locked himself in, which was not his custom. Thus, secured against surprise, he took off his cravat, put on his dressing gown and slippers and his nightcap, and sat down before the fire to take his gruel. It was a very low fire indeed, nothing on such a bitter night. He was obliged to sit close to it and brood over it before he could extract the least sensation of warmth from such a handful of fuel. The fireplace was an old one, built by some Dutch merchant long ago, and paved all round with quaint Dutch tiles. But if each smooth tile had been a blank at first, now there was a copy of old Marley's head on every one. Scrooge's glance happened to rest upon a bell, a disused bell that hung in the room and communicated for some purpose now forgotten with a chamber in the highest story of the building. It was with great astonishment and with a strange, inexplicable dread that as he looked, he saw this bell begin to swing. Clang, 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 clang. It swung so softly in the outset that it scarcely made a sound. Clang, 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 clang. But soon it rang out loudly, and so did every bell in the house. Clang, 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 clang. This might have lasted half a minute or a minute, but it seemed like an hour. Clang, 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 clang. The bells ceased as they had begun, together. They were succeeded by a clanking noise deep down below, as if some person were dragging a heavy chain over the casks in the wine merchant's cellar. Scrooge then remembered to have heard that ghosts in haunted houses were described as dragging chains. He heard the cellar door fly open with a booming sound, and then the noise much louder on the floors below, then coming up the stairs, then coming straight towards his door. It's humbug still. I won't believe it. His colour changed, though, when, without a pause, it came on through the heavy door and passed into the room before his eyes. Upon its coming in, the dying flame leapt up as though it cried, "I know him! Marley's ghost!" The same face. The very same. Marley, in his pigtail, usual waistcoat, tights and boots, the tassels on the latter bristling like his pigtail, and his coat skirts, and the hair upon his head. The chain he drew was clasped about his middle. It was long and wound about him like a tail, and it was made, for Scrooge observed it closely, of cash boxes, keys, padlocks, ledgers, deeds, and heavy purses wrought in steel. His body was transparent, so that Scrooge, observing him and looking through his waistcoat, could see the two buttons on his coat behind. Scrooge had often heard it said that Marley had no bowels, but he had never believed it until now. No, nor did he believe it even now, though he looked the phantom through and through and marked the very texture of the folded kerchief bound about its head and chin. "How now? What do you want with me?"
"Butch."
Marley's voice, no doubt about it. "Who are you?"
"Ask me who I was."
"Who were you then?"
"In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley."
Can you sit down?"
"I can."
"Do it then." Scrooge asked the question because he didn't know whether a ghost so transparent might find himself in a condition to take a chair. But the ghost sat down on the opposite side of the fireplace as if he were quite used to it.
"You don't believe in me?"
"I don't." Scrooge held on tight to his chair to save himself from falling in a swoon. But how much greater was his horror when the phantom, taking off the bandage round its head as if it were too warm to wear indoors, its lower jaw dropped down upon its breast.
"Dreadful apparition, why do you trouble me?" "Man of the worldly mind, do you believe in me or not?"
I do, I must. But why do spirits walk the earth, and why do they come to me?"
"It is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk abroad among his fellow men and travel far and wide. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander through the world. Oh, woe is me, and witness what it cannot share, but might have shared on earth, and turned into happiness."
"You are fettered. Tell me why."
91.5 WMFO Medford.
"I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link, and yard by yard. I girded it on of my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you, or would you know the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It was full as heavy and as long as this, 7 Christmas Eves ago. You have laboured on it since. It is a ponderous chain."
Scrooge glanced about him on the floor in the expectation of finding himself surrounded by some 50 or 60 fathoms of iron cable, but he could